Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck. Or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge. Upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Hey, it's Bubba Wallace from 2311 Racing. You know what feels like forever? Sitting on a plane waiting for takeoff. Good thing I've got Chumba Casino. With daily boosts and social casino games on tap, this is the kind of fun that makes time fly. Why not turbocharge your downtime? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello and welcome to this episode of Epochs, where I shall be once again continuing my narrative of the decline and fall of the Roman Republic, carrying on with Caesar's campaigns in Gaul. I think what I'll do is one episode per book of his narrative of his wars in Gaul. So we're up to book 3 of 8. And this time we're talking about the very end of 57 BC and the year 56 BC, which was a really, really busy year. I mean, they're all busy years, but this one's particularly busy. And yet it's one of the shorter chapters, so I'll probably read it almost in its entirety. But a lot goes on. So there's an unsuccessful campaign in the Alps. That is right at the end of 57 BC. They have there's a big fight, continuing fight on the Atlantic coast. If you remember last time, Caesar sort of gave the impression that Crassus, that is the Crassus's son, the son of Crassus, had sort of mopped up everything there. Well, he hadn't, or rather, maybe he had, but rebellions just break out immediately. Also, we're told he has a victorious campaign in Aquitania, which is sort of more central and southern France, Gaul. And then an indecisive campaign against the Marini. So not everything always goes Caesar's way. So far in our story of Caesar and Gaul, he's been more or less undefeated, hasn't he? Everything's essentially gone his way. There was the Helvetii, which he was able to sweep aside, more or less without too much trouble. There was the Ariovistus affair, which he was also, you know, ultimately completely successful in. And then there was the Belgic coalition with one or two minor reverses or setbacks, but essentially just completely victorious again. Well, things start to go awry a little bit for Caesar here or there. So let's start chronicling it. Let's jump straight in. So Caesar tells us this about towards the end of 57 BC, about his unsuccessful campaign in the Alps. We're told, quote, "When Caesar was starting for Italy, he sent Servius Galba with the 12th Legion and a detachment of cavalry to the territories of the Nantuantes, Viragri and Sarduni, which extend from the frontier of the Allobroges, the Lake of Geneva and the Rhone to the higher Alps." Once again, I'll put a map up so everyone can see exactly what we're talking about here. "His object was to open up the route over the Alps, by which invaders travelled only at great risk and on payment of heavy tolls. Galba was authorised to quarter his legion in the district for the winter, if he thought it necessary. After he had won several victories and taken a number of enemy fortresses, and all the tribes had sent envoys and given hostages, he made peace. He then decided to quarter 2 cohorts among the Nantuantes, and to winter with the remainder in a village of the Viragri called Octodurus, situated in a rather narrow valley and completely surrounded by very high mountains. The village was divided by a river into 2 parts, one of which he let the natives keep, while the other, which he made them evacuate, was assigned to his cohorts and fortified with a rampart and trench. Several days had been spent in this encampment, and Galba had ordered grain to be brought in, when suddenly he was informed by his patrols that during the night all the Gauls had quitted the part of the village allotted to them, and that the surrounding heights were occupied by an immense multitude of Sarduni and Viragri." So, treachery. "Various reasons had led the Gauls to form the sudden resolution of renewing hostilities and overpowering the Romans. In the first place, they despised the numerical weakness of the legion, which was under strength owing to the detachment of the two cohorts and a number of individuals who had been sent out in search of supplies. They just thought we could take these guys, basically. Secondly, they had the advantage of position, being able to run down and hurl their javelins into the valley beneath, and thought that they would carry all before them at their very first charge. They also resented having their children torn from them and kept as hostages. Nobody likes having their kids taken away, do they? And were convinced that the Romans were not merely seeking to open up communications, but intended to occupy the Alpine Heights permanently and to annex the district to the neighbouring province, which they were. The work of entrenching the camp was not quite completed, nor had a sufficient stock of grain and other supplies been laid in, because after the enemy's submission and surrender of hostages, Galba did not think that there was any reason to fear an outbreak of hostilities. On receiving the news, therefore, he at once called a council of war and invited opinions. The danger was as serious as it was sudden and unexpected. Nearly all the heights were seen to be already swarming with armed men, and neither relief nor supplies could be brought up because the roads were cut. Several members of the council were inclined to think the case hopeless and advised that they should abandon the baggage, force their way out, and try to reach a place of safety by retracing their steps. But the majority decided to reserve this plan as a last resort, and in the meantime to defend the camp and await developments. One thing to say is that the people of the Alps have historically always been very warlike. During the age of Hannibal, 150 odd years before, they put up a fairly stiff resistance, the best resistance they could. And of course it's their manor, isn't it? It's their backyard. So they know the terrain perfectly, able to ambush people and make roadblocks and throw down stones and spears and all sorts of things from the heights. And fighting in mountains is always very difficult, of course, especially if you're the attacker. The narrative continues, quote, "After a short interval, which barely gave time for posting the troops and carrying out the measures decided on, the enemy ran down from all sides at a given signal and began to hurl stones and spears at the rampart. At first, while our soldiers were still fresh, they resisted bravely, every missile they threw from their commanding position finding its mark, and ran to the relief of any part of the camp that was stripped of defenders and seemed to be in danger. But what told against them was that the enemy, when exhausted by prolonged fighting, could retire from the battle and be relieved by fresh troops, which our men could not do on account of their small numbers. Not only had tired men to stay in the fighting line, but even the wounded had to remain at their posts without any chance of respite." Bit of a Rorke's Drift moment, bit of an Alamo moment. "After more than 6 hours' continuous fighting, the Romans were at the end of their strength and had scarcely any weapons left to throw, while the enemy was pressing them harder than ever and took advantage of their exhausted state to break through the palisade and fill up the trenches. The situation was as bad as it could be, and Baculus, the chief centurion, who, as already said, was disabled by several wounds in the battle with the Nervi, came running to Galba with Gaius Quadratus, a military tribune and a man of sound judgment and great courage, and told him that their only hope of escape was to try their last resource, a sortie through the enemy's lines, breaking out of the siege. Accordingly, Galba summoned the centurions and immediately sent them to explain the new plan to the troops. They were to cease offensive actions for a time, merely using their shields to intercept the enemy's missiles. When they had had time to recover from their exertions, the signal would be given to break out of the camp. Then they would have to rely on their courage to save their lives. These orders were duly carried out. Suddenly they charged out from all the gates, without giving the enemy a chance of realising what was happening or of preparing to meet their onset. It was a complete reversal of fortune." See, fortune favours the brave. "He who dares wins, he who dares wins. The Gauls, who had counted on capturing the camp, were surrounded and cut off. Of the forces that had taken part in the attack, known to number over 30,000, more than a third were killed. The rest fled in terror and were not allowed to halt even on the mountain heights. Having thus routed and disarmed the entire host, the Romans retired within the shelter of their fortifications, and after this success, Galba did not want to take any more risks. The action which circumstances had compelled him to take was something which had never been contemplated when he was sent there to winter, and there was an alarming scarcity of corn and other supplies. Next day, therefore, he burnt all the buildings in the village and started to hasten back to the province, a Transalpine Gaul. Whenever Caesar talks of the province, he means Transalpine Gaul, i.e. southern France. No enemy barred his way or delayed his march, and he conducted the legion safely through the territory of the Nentuates into that of the Allobroges, where he spent the winter. End quote. So fortune really does favour the brave. As you can see there, the Caesar's general, Galba, only really meant to try and break out and flee for his life. But the mere act of doing that, the mere act of taking the initiative, of being offensive and aggressive massively, when the enemy doesn't expect you to do that, well, completely broke them, even though the Romans were massively, massively outnumbered. Caesar doesn't give us the exact numbers, certainly of the Romans, does he? But they were obviously massively outnumbered. But we can also only infer they couldn't have had a very, very strong morale or sense of battle order that they were essentially routed straight away. Okay, so Caesar moves on to the year 56 BC now, because we're BC, we always the numbers count down, so the year 56 is after the year 57. And he tells us all about the fight on the Atlantic coast. So we're told, quote, "With the completion of these operations, Caesar had already reason to think that Gaul was pacified. The Belgae were overpowered, the Germans driven out, and the Sedoni defeated in the Alps. He had therefore set out in the winter for Illyria, desiring to extend his acquaintance with the countries under his command by visiting the tribes of that district, when war suddenly broke out again in Gaul. The occasion of the outbreak was the action of young Publius Crassus, who, with the 7th Legion, occupied the winter camp nearest the Atlantic, in the territory of the Andes. As food was scarce in that region, he sent a number of auxiliary officers and military tribunes to the neighbouring people to seek a supply of corn and other provisions. Among others, Titus Terracidius was sent to the Esuvi, Marcus Trebius Gallus to the Coriolites, Quintus Valenus and Titus Silius to the Veneti. The Veneti are much the most powerful tribe on this coast. They have the largest fleet of ships in which they traffic with Britain. They excel the other tribes in knowledge and experience of navigation. And as the coast lies exposed to the violence of the open sea and has but few harbours, which the Veneti control, they compel nearly all who sail those waters to pay toll. They were the first to take action against the Romans by detaining Silius and Valenius and any others they could catch, hoping by this to recover the hostages they had given to Crassus. Their neighbours followed their example with the impulsive haste that characterises the actions of the Gauls, a bit of a dig there from Caesar, and detained Trebius and Terracidius with the same motive, hurriedly dispatching envoys to one another. Their leaders pledged the various tribes to take no separate action, but to share alike whatever fortune might befall them. They urged the other tribes to preserve their inherited liberties and not submit to the Roman yoke, and quickly gained the adherence of all the maritime people, who sent a joint embassy calling upon Crassus to return their hostages if he wanted to recover his officers." End quote. So a bit of a coalition forming there. Well, definitely a coalition forming there. Seems like Crassus the Younger, was just far too hasty when he thought he had subdued that part of Gaul. He just simply hadn't. It seems like he might have taken them unawares. He'd turned up with his cohorts or legions, and they hadn't been ready to fight or put up any real resistance. And so he'd overawed them. But that isn't defeating a people, is it? Sucker punching someone when they're not looking and they're not ready is not the same as fighting them and defeating them, is it? It's not the same thing. So now this part of Gaul is going to rise up and try and resist Rome. The story goes on. Quote, "When Caesar was informed of these events by Crassus, he was far away from Gaul. He was on his way to Illyrium, and therefore instructed his subordinates to use the time that must elapse before his arrival in building warships on the River Loire, which flows into the Atlantic, enlisting crews in the province and procuring seamen and captains. These orders were promptly attended to, and Caesar rejoined his troops as soon as the campaigning season started. On learning of his arrival and the Roman preparations, the Veneti and the other tribes, realising the gravity of the crime they had committed in detaining and imprisoning envoys, an office that all nations had always held sacred and inviolable, began to make ready for war on a scale commensurate with the seriousness of their peril, paying particular attention to the provisions of equipment for their ships. So naval engagements are going to ensue. Their hopes of success were increased by the confidence they placed in the natural strength of their country. The geographical strength, they mean. They knew that the roads were intersected by tidal inlets and that sailing would be difficult for us the Romans, on account of our ignorance of the waterways and the scarcity of harbours. And they felt sure that our armies would be prevented by a shortage of grain from staying there very long. And even if all their expectations were disappointed, they had a strong fleet, while we had no ships available and were unacquainted with the shoals, harbours and islands of the coast on which we should have to fight. And sailing in a wide ocean was clearly a very different matter from sailing in a landlocked sea like the Mediterranean. Having resolved to fight, they fortified their strongholds, stocked them with corn from the fields, and assembled as many ships as possible on the coast of Venetia, where it was generally thought that Caesar would open hostilities. They secured the alliance of various tribes in the neighbourhood. Long list of tribes coming up. The Osimi, Loxivi, Namnetes, Ambialatae, and Diablintes, and of the Marini and Menapii, and summoned reinforcements from Britain, which faces that part of Gaul. End quote. So, this is a serious coalition. It might not well have been quite on the order of the Belgae coalition in terms of numbers, but it was very, very serious, and there's a naval element to it all. So it's a completely different kettle of fish.
To watch the full video, please become a premium member at lotuseaters.com.
How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step one, go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step two, collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step three, play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games, all for free.
Step four, unleash your excitement.
Woo-hoo! Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus terms and conditions apply.